It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, and engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Hey there, welcome to the program. We're excited to be with you, and we have lots of good stuff to share, so let's get right to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
The man, the myth, the legend, Scott Connor.
All right. Go.
What do you got?
Pretty flat day on Thursday's trade.
It's you love volume. To say that. You it's, love to say, yeah, it's a pretty flat day. On the-
it was a pretty flat day. It's going into a three-day weekend. There's a big important number coming out Friday morning.
Yeah, but we won't know about it. Right? No, all the traders will have the day off, so nobody's going to be able to do anything with it.
That's why I don't think anything really happened on Thursday, because you know, we had the selling off earlier in the week. I think that was traders unwinding risk going into a long weekend with a big number coming out. But the Dow was off 14 points on Thursday, closed at 13060, so still above 13,000. S&P basically flat at 1398. The NASDAQ up 12 at 3080. Oil pretty flat at 164. Gold up 17. Probably coming back from some of its massive sell-off of the last couple days. Tens at 219. So, nothing really exciting there. Big news for Thursday's market, the weekly unemployment claims benefit number. 6,000 new claimants for unemployment benefits.
That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. It puts us to a seasonally adjusted 357,000. It fell by 6,000. Seasonally adjusted 357,000. Also got the Challenger layoff report. It's a kind of an obscure report. It's basically a survey of companies and how much they plan
think
on laying
lay off.
Yeah, and that number was also down significantly. So,
well, that's good news.
Yeah, so those are good pieces of news. As far as the jobs number goes for Friday morning, economists are expecting an increase of 203,000 jobs. That will make the fourth straight monthly gain above 200,000.
Well, we need double that.
Yeah, we need double that. It's still going in the right direction, but it's a pretty...
Is there any way we can biggie size that?
We need to. It's a pretty anemic number. News from Facebook on Thursday's trade. They announced that they are going to trade on the NASDAQ. There was a lot of hemming and hawing about would they be on the New York or the NASDAQ or they'll be on
the
NASDAQ.
I guess it makes sense. They're a tech stock and NASDAQ is pretty tech-laden and heavy stock.
Yeah, they were fighting over them hard, though, because obviously there'll be a lot of trading there and a lot
of...
Well,
who was fighting? The
New York.
The folks that run these...
The exchanges. Yeah, the exchanges.
What's in it for them?
Well, because they get a piece of the volume. You know, they get the traders on the floor there get a piece of the spread between the bid and the ask, right? And then part of that has to go to the exchange. So, I mean, it's just more business for that exchange.
You know, if you say bid and ask real fast, it sounds like biting you in the... But go ahead.
Yeah, it does.
What people feel like when the traders are getting a hold of them.
Yeah, so that's Facebook's news. And then looking ahead at next week, earnings season starts on Tuesday with Alcoa. Yep, it seems like we just got out of earnings season. So that's Tuesday's big news. Wednesday, we have a 10-year note auction. Thursday, a PPI announcement. Friday, a CPI announcement. But we're going to be talking a lot about earnings in the next couple of weeks.
Because at the end of the day, no matter what, ultimately, it comes home to earnings, right?
Yeah, I mean, the stock market is designed to be a discounting mechanism of future earnings, so...
So nothing's worth more than what somebody's willing to give you for it and what they're willing to give you for it is a function of what it's going to give them, get them if they get it from you.
Yeah, in a completely rational market, which I don't know that has ever existed, but...
But if you draw a line through the irrationality up or down or whatever it is, you have the essence of what happens with things trading hands.
Yeah, and positive earnings growth is positive for everything. It's positive
for the
economy.
You have a car and you want to... I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you have a car and you want to trade it into the dealership, what's that worth? What they're willing to give you.
Right, and what you're willing to take.
Exactly.
So that was the big news. The jobs number, total 7.05 million people claiming unemployed benefits during the week. So
that's still, a lot of people still.
Still a lot of people unemployed.
So there's 12 million.
And that's
million.
Only those claiming benefits. So we can get into the whole participation rate thing of
Please
people
don't.
Who are not.
If you, you know, we may have to add participation to the diffusion list that we can...
I'm not going to be able to say anything.
No, say good stuff. We're just going to have fun with it. That's all. Here, you got the button, Lisa? Okay, hold on.
Man, and I you wasted that on no diffusion indices today.
That's all right. We're going to use it for participation right now, too.
All right.
No, here's the question. And you maybe forget my question.
7 million people on unemployment.
Oh, so there's 7 million that are claiming unemployment
right.
out of
benefits.
The total of 12 that are unemployed.
Right.
So why aren't the other five claiming unemployment?
Well, they either are been unemployed too long.
Ah, long-term unemployed.
Or they're not looking, or they never qualified for benefits in the first place.
Because they didn't work there long enough?
Yeah.
Or never have had a job?
Right.
So you count in that number if you never had a job because
yes.
you graduate, you get out of college, whatever
yeah,
it is.
If you are non-institutionalized, which means not in a prison, a hospital, college, something like that.
Or overseas. Or does the military count?
It's not part of the employment number.
It's not. Okay.
No, but...
We appreciate them, but they don't count in the number.
Yeah, but and if we bring a ton of troops home all of a sudden, that it puts pressure on jobs.
Now, isn't that an interesting wrinkle?
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody considered that?
I mean, it's something that I have thought of.
Well, there's at least one that's considered it.
Yep, and I have done everything in my power to do what I can about it.
All right, well, we're going to do everything we can to come right back from this break. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Are we back already? Wow, that was quick. Okay, well, Scott, I know you got, like, look at that. You got like 50 things over there to talk about. Go ahead.
I'm going to introduce you to a new term that I think is going to become part of the general lexicon in the near future.
Will it be part of our button pushing to?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But this is right up Lisa's alley.
Okay, Lisa.
Google has revealed details of an augmented reality product.
Sounds great so far.
Augmented reality. It's a pair of glasses. And basically, if you think of it this way, it almost puts you inside your iPhone. So you have these little glasses on, and if you call up a map, your map shows up on your glasses. It's very position aware. So if you're walking around, say, New York City, and the subway station that you're about to enter is closed, it flashes up and says your subway station is closed. If you walk past a store that you happen to like, and you put it in your glasses as a store that you're, it flashes up. There's a big sale on whatever today.
And this is Apple?
This is Google.
Google. Also I get it. Google goggles.
Your text messages can come right up on the augmented reality glasses. It's really, I think, going to be a big thing.
That's pretty neat. So how are they going to make money on it?
Well,
just selling them?
They'll make money the same way Apple makes money. They'll sell the product. They'll somehow wrap up the ecosystem so that you have to buy all the products through them. And
then you'd have to have some sort of wireless internet service because obviously these things need to be wireless.
Yeah, they're wireless, similar to the way your iPhone is wireless. It's either 3G, 4G, or whatever. And of course,
so you have to have a service plan.
Yeah, of course.
Ah,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. So augmented reality, they look like a pretty cool product, to be candid.
Do you've looked at them? They look cool?
Yeah, they look. I mean, they're not heinously ugly, but I mean, I think the usability of them is pretty good. Also in corporate news, JCPenney, you know, JCPenney has been undergoing a big revamping of their entire line, every store and the way they do business and everything. Announced a big management shakeup. Thursday, letting go about 15% of staff in its Plano, Texas headquarters. They're trying to go from a promotionally driven department store, meaning look at the great sale we have, to one that focuses on presentation and just everyday low value, which is a big shift to make. But remember, the guy running the show there is the guy who was behind the idea of the Apple store. Chief Executive Ron Johnson came from Apple, and he was the king of retail at Apple, and he's now charged with revamping JCPenney. But obviously, he's not afraid to make a significant change and put himself out on the line a little bit.
He's going to have to do something bold to turn them around.
Yeah, well, he is.
Well, let's see. I want to see the proof in the pudding.
Yep, but he's only been on the job since November.
He better get busy.
And they have been making a lot of splashes. So that's about it for corporate news for Thursday. A couple pieces of economic news. Spain held a auction, another auction. Borrowing costs went up pretty significantly in
how much they want
this
now?
Particular 10-year yields on Spanish bonds, 5.81.
Okay, that's sneaking up. They're getting close to 6%.
That's 15 basis points, basically. That's the highest level since December. Although France did another auction of their own, which went pretty well. They had slightly higher yields, but they sold a ton of bonds. Also, France has announced that they are going to be in a budget surplus by 2017.
Really?
That's what they said.
You believe that, right?
I believe they said it.
Okay. That's a lot of work.
They said it.
Who's had a budget surplus?
Well,
what government has had a budget surplus that you can think of in the last 20 years?
I don't know. Sarkozy said it. He says he can do it. And
I mean, back in the 90s when Clinton was in office, there was a lot of fuss about we had a budget surplus. There was they had a projected budget surplus, and it never. I mean, I'm looking at the historical debt for the United States, and every year the debt's getting bigger. So I don't see any reduction in our debt.
Yeah. Well, Spain is trying to be a little bit more proactive. Now, Spain is not exactly in great shape, but they are in better shape than most of their European neighbors. Italy also with a 10-year yield that climbed 12 basis points to 5.48.
Yeah, they've done a lot of work, and I think that they've made some improvements, but there's a lot of work still to go.
Yep, and then finally, I want to talk to you about the Jobs Act, signed into law by President Obama on Thursday. The Jobs Act is an acronym for Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act.
All right, when do I get my check?
Well, you don't
or
get
a tax
you don't
break.
Get a check.
What do I get? Tell me what I'm getting.
What you get is the ability to take your company public really easily.
Okay.
Like really easily.
Okay.
You don't have to have accredited investors. You don't have to go public when you get 500 investors. You don't necessarily have to follow all the SEC rules about accounting regularities and clarity to investors.
Really?
Yeah. So this whole thing that we've been going through with Groupon, remember they've had to come back and restate a lot of their earnings? That would not have been a problem under the Jobs Act.
So I don't know what to say to that. I mean, it's...
Well, the idea is that it makes it easier for small companies to get capital.
Okay.
Right? Which is a good thing. It helps business grow. But the potential for fraud and for taking advantage of it is significant enough that the CFA Institute sent an email to all charters that said, listen, folks, this is not a good idea. This is not good for investors. It's not good for market transparency. It's just not good. It's another shortcut, just like when we were just giving loans away without having to have anybody prove income. To me, it's the same thought process. Just make it easy. It'll work itself out. You got to trust people to not game the system. Well, guess what? People game the system if you give them a chance, and this gives them a chance.
It's like they do Frank Dodd over here to heighten the regulation, and then over on the other side, they're loosening it and making it super easy.
Yeah, this undoes a lot of previous regulation.
Good grief. You know, it'd be so much simpler if they want to stimulate economic growth and they want to get small businesses to be stronger and hire people, then make it really easy. Give us a tax credit or a tax deduction for certain things, or you know, for every person you hire in 2012, if they're there at the beginning of the year and they're there at the end of the year, we'll give you X amount of a tax write-off.
Yeah, this legislation actually undoes Sarbanes-Oxley for clients of less than $1 billion in revenue, which Sarbanes-Oxley only came into place when Enron blew up. It's 10 years old, that legislation.
And they did that because of the internal controls and all of that.
Now we don't need that. We need startup money.
So growth over regulation.
Yeah. In this case, I think it's to the investor's detriment.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. That sounds like they're just gutting the whole process that is in place to make IPOs
easy.
Safer, yep. Easy. Yeah,
make
but
them easy.
It's got to be more rigorous. All right, Lisa, I know we need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I want to talk to Scott about why investors are still taking pot shots at this poor bull market we're in.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Alrighty, we are back, and I want to get your read on this, Scott. We've got it. We got this market where it just seems like the retail investor, everyday investors, are just not excited. They're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yeah, they're still on the sidelines, and unfortunately, in the meantime, the market has really rocketed since October.
Well, and we've seen our portfolios, they have responded very well to this market. We just had a meeting with a client and going over performance and. Year to date, what were they up? They were up 11%.
Well, they're in our tactical model, which is up almost 12% year to date.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And without nearly the risk of the overall market because of the amount of diversification we're using, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, but people are just, they're skittish. And I think some of that has to do with how bitter their experience was with 2000 through 2002. And then, of course, everybody is very much still licking their wounds from the 2008 carnage.
Yeah, that's two pretty negative events in the course of 10 years. It doesn't really inspire lot of incentive.
No, it doesn't. And the other thing I think that's really weighing on people, 2011 ended up being basically a flat year, but there was a couple of times where you and I were talking about, man, it could get pretty ugly. We were staring at a pretty significant drop in the market.
Yeah, September.
And in August, we had one day in August, like almost 7% loss for the market. And the Federal Reserve, of course, people don't know what, they don't know what to make of that either. I think people, there's a distrust of the Federal Reserve. Why do you think that is? Just because it's part of government?
I think a lot of what the Federal Reserve does is a complete mystery, even to industry professionals. They're very sort of, they're a lot more transparent than they used to be. But historically speaking, they've been very much sort of a cloaked type of an entity. A lot of the stuff they do, they'll take an action that won't have any consequences or any measurable results for 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So it doesn't always look like they're doing anything that's helping. But I mean, to me, the Fed has really made things a lot better than we would have been without them.
I mean, would we have survived this whole economic meltdown this recession and all the things that happened? Would these companies, banks, car companies literally failed, and what would have been the ultimate? That could have been even a lot worse than it was.
Yeah, it definitely could have been. I mean, even if you just look at the TARP, where we took all those toxic assets off of corporate balance sheets and brought them into the governmental balance sheet, it doesn't make the government a healthier entity, but it does make private industry a healthier entity.
Well, I'm just looking at something as simple as, if General Motors had literally been allowed to fail completely.
Yeah.
How many people would have lost jobs?
That's a lot of jobs.
What would have been the true economic? So I think there's, people are frustrated with the Fed because they say, oh, well, they're the ones to blame for my low CD rate. And I think that's is certainly a fair statement.
Yeah.
But the reality is they're safe. The move was to save the economy. So your CD rate, low, yes. By the way, there are alternatives and we can help you with that. But the point is that people just, they don't understand. I think it's almost like a higher order of language or a whole nother, like you said, they do things that affect down the road. We don't always understand it.
And it's a very, very inexact science. I mean, the stuff that they do, they don't even know if it's going to work.
Well, that's comforting, Scott. Thank you for that.
But that's how it is. And again, we've talked about that tsunami that we had last year. You can't predict that. You can't prepare for it, really.
And I don't think anybody expected the amount of impact it had on the global economy.
Yeah.
You expected, of course, to have an impact on Japan, but it was felt literally around the world, just like that wave was.
Yeah, it sure was. So, the Fed is, I think, a necessary evil. I'm not surprised people dislike them. And then you have politicians like Ron Paul that just pound and pound and pound
and say pretty stupid stuff.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, pretty much you can expect that from politicians. They're going to say stuff that's kind of off the wall, or you go, huh?
Yeah.
Both sides say things sometimes. I'm like scratching my head. Well, speaking of maybe not so smart or something challenging, Greek banks face a moment of truth. I was going to mention this to you and tell me what you thought. Get this, Greek bank shareholders are now under pressure from Athens to have to pony up more money. This is amazing. They're basically, the government is saying, look, if you shareholders of these banks don't put more money in to shore up these banks, then we're going to nationalize the banks. When does it end?
I mean, they're in a recession. Unemployment is going up. GDP is going down. Their debt rates are still extremely high. I mean, their interest rates are still extremely high. It's a very difficult downward cycle to break that they're in.
Well, the worst case scenario, Reuters had a report, they might have to put in as much as $50 billion into their banks. That's a quarter of their gross domestic product.
Yeah.
How in the world do they do that? And you know where that money's going to come from, right?
Yeah, it's
external.
They have a very, very, very hard road ahead of them. No question about it. That bailout money, and we talked about it when it happened, the bailout money that they got was by no means the end of their misery.
That was just a little bit of hold you over.
Yeah.
It's almost like, and this is a very crude example, and it's not meant to be insensitive, but it's almost like loaning money to a crack addict who has no choice but to use the money to buy more crack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ugly. I don't see how they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean,
they had to extend the bond swap deadline. So, you know, this is the world we live in, ladies and gentlemen. So keep this in mind as you think about where you're investing. And I know Scott and I sometimes get a little bit of some technical points here to talk about. But I think this is something that you got to be careful with. All right, Scott, we're going to go to a break. Thank you for joining us today.
Yep.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
This is your 2-minute warning.
And we're back, and I've enjoyed having Scott on the program. Hope you guys are enjoying this. We're going to turn our attention now to David's hypersensitivity to seeing seminar invitations go to his parents. These guys are funny. They send invitations to people, and I love it because my parents are in the target market for going to financial seminars. And if you've listened to the program or just joining us, I've done financial seminars in the past. They have been a great thing in the past. I don't do them anymore just because a bunch of folks got into doing it and gave it a negative taint or view by the public. And a lot of people that come are there just to eat. I'm calling it like it is. So my goal when I did them was to give people some understanding, kind of like I do on the show, the radio, helping them understand how this financial stuff works. And if they want my help, great, come in and I'll talk to you. But it's funny to me because I see these invitations. I'm crisping it so that Lisa can see it. I get these and I go, what in the world? The pitches are just, I don't know if I should send this stuff in to the regulators or what, but some of these things are just outrageous that they say. Here you go. Ready? Here you go. How to get market returns without market risks. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist. Come on. Realize tax-free gains. Tax-free gains. Well, what do you mean? If you got a gain, it's taxable. Period. So when you get these, again, I've said this before, but if you're really serious about going, okay, first thing you do, Google the speaker. If you can't tell who the speaker is, throw it away. If you see who the speaker is, Google it, see what's out there on that speaker, and go to the FINRA.org to do a broker check. You'll be really surprised, maybe even amused by what you find on a lot of the people that are out there. Or go to SEC.gov if they're an investment advisor like yours truly. So FINRA.org, SEC.gov. All right. That's your 2-minute warning. I'm right back after this break with an interesting conversation with you about retirement planning for 2012 and beyond, and then planning your retirement tax strategies and a couple of other items. Stay tuned.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs. A message from the Alzheimer's Association.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
And we're back, and I'm going to wrap the show up today with a conversation with you about planning your retirement in 2012 and beyond. Now, the big thing that a lot of people are trying to figure out is, how do I retire with all this craziness that's gone on? And, you know, I suppose that it's always been crazy, right? Those of you that are listening to the program and say, David, hey, you ain't got nothing. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, or this ain't nothing. Remember the Cold War and how tense things were? Or, you know, do you remember when this happened or that happened? How about when Kennedy was shot? There's always been something crazy going on. How about waiting in line to get gas, where you're only allowed to get 5 gallons or $5 or whatever it was of gallon of gas you could acquire because of the oil embargoes? It's always been crazy. So you've got a plan ahead, and you want to be prudent, you want to make smart choices. But a lot of people are wondering, you know, with so much volatility in the market, do I invest in stocks? And you, those of you that listen to the show on a regular basis, you know I tend to be a little more conservative than perhaps some of the other folks out there that want to talk to you about stock, about barbells, dumbbells, straddles, puts, options, calls, covered calls, naked trades, all that stuff that I think is inappropriate for most people. But that said, I still like stocks, and I think stocks are a great place to put your money, but only part of your money, and only the money that you're planning on using later. Much later, at least 5 years out. I want to draw income. If you're approaching retirement or you're in retirement, you've got to avoid that deadly thing called dollar cost averaging, which is where you're drawing your income from money invested in the market. It's a big no-no. It will kill your retirement. There, I said it. Kill your retirement. You need to look at stock investing, be it directly in stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, all that stuff, for longer term. A lot of people are worried about inflation. It is going to heat up. I know it's coming. I think a lot of people are expecting it. And when it comes, we talked about the Federal Reserve earlier and about interest rates and things like that. I think in order to make sure that the economy is going to grow and not fall back into another recession, that the Federal Reserve will have its hands tied somewhat and not be able to raise interest rates to tame inflation, which is what they normally do, for fear of truncating, shortening, and reducing the growth of our labor force and reducing unemployment. So it's a balancing act, but I think their hands are going to be somewhat tied because they'll be afraid. It's kind of like having to fight somebody and you only can use one hand because you're holding a baby. You can't throw the baby on the ground to fight with both hands. So that's the Federal Reserve. They're going to have to hold the baby, which is the fledgling economy, and they're going to have to fight inflation with one hand, which, because they want to make sure that the unemployment numbers continue to grow. We've got 12 million people unemployed, and they've got to get those numbers down to have a healthy economy that will be what we need it to be. So I think stocks should be part of your portfolio and should be something that's longer term. With inflation, the stock market's your best bet for fighting inflation. It's very difficult to predict what inflation is going to be. But I don't think gold will do that. I don't think gold is an inflation hedge. I think it's more of a crisis hedge. When you see inflation start to percolate, yes, gold could go up. But I think that the market is a better way to fight long-term inflation. Now, how do you invest in stocks? Lots of ways, as I said, ETFs, mutual funds, and all of that. Should you do it yourself? Should you hire a broker? Should you hire somebody to be an investment advisor? That's for you to decide. You need to weigh the choices. I've got a book I wrote, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. That's what that's all about. It's about understanding how brokers and advisors work. So I think it's important to think about these different ways of managing your money. The other thing I want to talk about is the taxation. As you get closer, you need to think about taxes on your 401k and your IRA money. And I've had this come up a couple times here recently with some people I've been working about. And you need to look at what to do when it's time to retire. And for a lot of people, it's time to roll that 401k over. I think it's really smart to look at rolling it into an IRA. Maybe you put part into an investment account that you can have somebody manage for you, or maybe part of it goes into something that will produce an income like an annuity or maybe an income portfolio. But, you know, make sure that you do that and you roll it over and have control over it. If you keep it at 401k, you know, there is not as much control and your choices are going to be limited in that 401k. So you can build a plan and have that money set up so that it'll give you what you need in retirement. But the most important thing of all is it needs to be tailored to your unique situation. I met with a couple here recently and they said, well, give us a rule of thumb or give me an idea. Or I'm like, well, you know what I need to do? I need to build you a plan. That's how I need to figure out what makes sense for you. For what makes sense for you, my listener, tune in another day. Thanks for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.